to Season 5, Episode 7 of the Massive Fans Book Club Podcast. We're back! We had so much fun in the live chat on Discord last weekend, and it was just, like, really cool to be able to, like, talk, like, fan theories and TV theories and, like, what are they gonna do with the TV show if all the show, like, if all the books are gonna cross over and, like, what the heck? And it was just awesome to chat about all the things with all the people, so thank you for joining us.
It really was. We had a great time, and of course, we were so lucky because Michaela joined us. For those of you who have been listening to us for a while, you've heard us talk to Michaela before. She was a guest on our episode during the High Lords meeting in Akawar. So anyway, she joined us, and we had a lovely chat with her. It was really good to see her and catch up with her. So Michaela, if you're listening, hey, but we had some really interesting conversations come up about different things, about different books and how they're all going to connect. And it was awesome. It was awesome getting to talk to our fans on there that joined us. So for those of you that are listening that did, thank you. We had the best time.
We did. And now today we're going to cover only chapter 29 of A Court of Silver Flames. It's like a lot of pages, like a lot. And it's like a large amount of stuff happening.
Yeah.
Like a lot of stuff happening. And I mean, I don't know. I'm not done with the book, but I did read ahead and, you know, I just got to say, I'm pretty sure that this is like basically where everything is going to start happening.
Yeah. It is.
Like, I think the next couple of episodes are going to be huge.
yeah, they are. I mean, this is kind of where things start to really kick off and get rolling. And I'm excited. I'm so excited for you to finally be here and to kind of be at that point with us, because I need it. So yay. So that all being said, you know, as always, everybody, this podcast is not for little ears. There's nothing triggering in this episode. There's nothing worrisome. We cuss a lot because we get really pissed off at Resand.
I was going to say, some people do some stupid shit and then I get really mad about it. So.
Yeah, between Meryl and Resand, we both, yeah. So anyway, that's why there's the disclaimer on it. But you know, truly, guys, this episode's just not for little ears. There is enough alluded to that even though we don't need a trigger warning, there's definitely, if you've read it or if you have a good imagination, you can start doing some math and putting things together too, all on your own. So please don't listen to this with your little ones in the car.
And that being said, okay, like enough chit chat. We got like a lot of shit to get through. And yep, there's like 4,000 yep. snowflakes, so let's do it.
Okay, let's go. Yes.
Time to dive in to the top of 29. So, okay, all you really need to know is that the first sentence made me laugh out loud, which is Nesta's legs gave out on step 3,000. And I'm like, wow, bitch is really doing it. Like,
mm-hmm.
Good for her. I don't even really see why she feels the need to go that far ever, but I mean, fine, sure, whatever. I guess I forget that she's Faye. She's got, like, you know, probably more stamina than most of us.
Well, also remember though, she's doing 3,000 down means 3,000 up, which is really 6,000.
Right. Okay. But also, you know what is shitty about this that I thought of the last time she mentioned how many steps she does? The down is the easier part. So, like, if you expend your energy going down, coming back up is just going to be, like, a death sentence.
There's no hi-ho, hi-ho, off to work we go.
I'm like, damn, that's wild. But anyway, she had bad dreams, you know, a la, you know, Pharaoh.
Poor baby.
We do that. And she's kind of doing a, oh, woe is me, which in fairness is kind of deserved. She realizes that she had gone to go eat dinner, there was no Cassian, there was no Az. They're off doing whatever it is they do without her. And she kind of just gets into this little spiral of like, well, I don't want to eat alone. And of course I wouldn't have been invited out. And she kind of gets in her own head where what it says is she'd made a point to be as unpleasant as possible for well over a year now. And more than that, they had no obligation to include her in everything. No one had any obligation to include her at all, or the desire to, apparently. So that's how we ended up on the stairs, which is like sad, but also kind of just surprising, because you'd think you almost think this wouldn't have even crossed her mind, because she has spent so many like meals alone. She doesn't want to see people. It's kind of crazy to think that so quickly now she's gotten used to their company that now she's sad that they left her behind.
Part of that's also a sign that she's truly starting to heal and find out who she is. But I don't know. I mean, like, I find it interesting because, you know, in this little bit right here, she's going down. One of the things she realizes is, well, if she ever made it to the bottom, where would she go?
Right. Right. And that, yeah.
Especially in her nightgown, but where would she go?
Yeah, you get about like a third of the way down this like second page or whatever, and it's like, oh yeah, she's in her nightgown. She really just decided to do this on a whim. But all right, here we are. And now she's starting to think over, like, you know, I've got to find the trove. I failed at every task, but I don't want to fail at this one. Like, I got to figure this out. And essentially her train of thought goes from, you know, I failed at everything. Like, you know, last time I failed, like, you know, the wall got blasted apart and then everybody's dying in it. Okay, like, gotta stop there. Stop thinking. And what's really sweet is she's on the stairs and she's trying to like shut this thought process down when a glass of water appears. Because the house is like, bitch, you need to hydrate.
Yeah, pretty much.
You need to chill. Here, hydrate. And then what's really cute is she starts asking the house, like, while she's taking a break on the stairs, you know, presumably before turning around to come back up. She asked the house, you know, well, have you read any of the Selen Drake books, the ones that the girls were talking about, you know, last section? And she's like, you know, a friend is bringing me one and I'll share it with you when I'm done. And the house sends a cool breeze down the stairs, is like, okay, thank you. Have your water, cool off. I believe in you. Which is so cute.
But then it sends her a message.
Yeah, it's really cute until it's not. The house is like, well, since you're in such a good mood now, talking about books and stuff, like, and now that you're hydrated, you think you want to throw some bones and stones?
Yeah.
And she's like, I can't. And the house tries to like blow them together, being like, no, you gotta. And it, you know, presumably is asking, well, like, why can't you? And she literally says out loud, bad things happened the last time. The cauldron looked at me and took Elaine. I can't endure it. Risk it. Not even for this. And the bones of stones vanish. So does the breeze. And it's, she's just left alone now to walk up the stairs feeling like she's disappointed the house.
I know. My heart breaks for her on that.
I know. And which also, like, we get a snowflake here, but just to, like, wrap this little thing up, it seems a little shitty to me that the house chose this exact moment to try to push her, because it's like, wait, she's finally doing kind of okay. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It sort of felt like, yo, house, your timing sucks.
Yeah, I would agree.
But, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, we get a snowflake.
We do. And apparently we're having dinner with the inner circle. Which is where Cassian and Azrael taken off to. And Amryn's all, well, she has to start looking for the trove. And I'm just like, okay, Amryn, can we be a bitch any more than you already are?
Everybody really at this dinner is so immeasurably stupid that it makes me so mad.
I love the comment in here, though. Feyre had gone to bed. Being pregnant made her unbearably sleepy, she'd groused. So tired that she needed naps throughout the day and was asleep most nights by 9. You know, when I was pregnant, I remember that. I remember that I was working, and where I was working, I used to take, they were really awesome, and I could take some extra breaks. But my lunch break, 9 times out of 10, I would just eat lunch at my desk and work. But I would go out to my car during my lunch break and actually take a nap. Set an alarm and take a nap in my car. Because, well, yeah, I was tired. So I do remember that. I swear I've been, you know, that's exhausting. I don't know what it is, but there's something about growing another human inside you that
I was going to say, growing a whole human's got to take some, as Justin pointed out to me one time when I said I was like tired and hungry. He was like, well, yeah, like growing a whole human probably uses some calories.
Just a few. Cassian goes to defend her and goes to defend Nesta. And he's like, you know, she's been looking, don't push her. And Rhys decides to be a total prick. And he's like, she's had the priestesses researching for her. I'd hardly call that looking. But I love it because Varian's there. So they have let Varian in on the little secret. And Varian's just like, wait a minute. Why haven't you asked Helion? He's got all these crazy libraries. And as it says in here, Varian was the only person outside of the Night Court and Aerys whom Rhys had allowed to know of their search. But it came with a risk. Varian served Tarquin, the High Lord of the Summer Court. Though he had promised Rhys not to say anything about it to Tarquin without prompting, if Tarquin asked Varian about it, he'd find his allegiances held in a precarious balance. We do know that Tarquin and Rhys have healed their pissing match bad attitude after the war, which, thank God, we all need a friend, or five. We still just didn't trust him with knowledge of the Trove. And he acknowledges that he finally does like Varian, which, yay. But as Rhys says, healing is a last resort, which we may come to in a matter of days if Nesta does not at least attempt a scrying. And then he looks at Cassie and says, I'd have Elaine try her hand before we approach him, though. And Elaine apparently already had gone to bed. See, this is... I find this a little sketch about Elaine. I'm sorry. But
yeah.
Elaine had already departed with Feyre, claiming she had to be up with the dawn to tend to an elderly fairy's garden. Cassian didn't exactly know why he suspected this wasn't true. There had been some tightness in Elaine's face as she had said it. Normally, when she made such excuses, Lucien was around. But the male remained in the human lands with Jurian and Vasa.
Yeah.
Interesting. And no, I have no idea. I think it's alluding to Elaine's story and Elaine's true character. What do I know? You know, Cassian does acknowledge that, you know, Nesta will do it, if nothing else, because she doesn't want Elaine to do it, but to give her a little bit of time. And Amber's like, you know, we don't have time for her to decide when she's comfortable to do this. You know, she's like, I say we approach Elaine tomorrow. Better to have both of them working on it. To which Azrael now gets defensive. And he's like, there's an innate darkness to the Dread Trove that Elaine should not be exposed to.
And if anything pisses Cassian off more, it's everybody.
He's like, oh, but Nesta should?
Yeah, it's everybody babying Elaine.
I know. Everyone stares at him. You know, Amarin finally is like, Nesta has a week. One more week to find the Trove with her own methods, and then we seek other routes, including Elaine. Cassian and look to Rhys, who just lets it stand because Amarin is his number two, and he lets it stand. And so Cassian justifiably is a little mad. And he's like, you know, it's not right that you're using Elaine as a threat to manipulate Nesta to do what you want. And I have to agree with that. I think it's kind of shitty that that's what they're doing. And she goes, well, there are harsher ways to convince Nesta boy. Cassian finally leans back and he goes, you're a fool if you think threats will make her obey you. And apparently,
that's the fucking truth.
Everyone gets tense, except, including Varian. And I'm just like, damn, throw down, Cassian.
Well, the thing is, and I think this is what I find so bothersome at this point, is like, even if Feyre is pretty dang powerful, ain't nobody gonna let her be powerful right now when she doesn't have the energy, right?
Exactly.
So truthfully, and Amarin doesn't have her power anymore. Nesta is probably only second to Reese, and their powers are very different.
So, very different.
It's a little fucked to me that this isn't just innately everybody's thought process. The fact that Cassian has to be like, yeah, good luck with that. Like, kind of what I used to always say, you want a villain, this is how you get a villain. Like, you push her, this is how you get a villain, and you don't want to fight this. I can't believe everybody's like, oh, he said the thing we all know is true.
I know. But Amarin, being Amarin, continues off on her little bitchy streak. She's like, we have to head off the potential disaster before we lose advantage. If we need to manipulate Nesta into scrying, even by using Elaine against her, then we'll do what is necessary. And Cassie's like, I don't like it. And this is when Amarin just shows what a bitch she is, because she's like, you don't have to like it. You just have to shut up and do as you're told. And I'm like, yeah. Okay. Reese does kind of give her the look, the sound, the voice, the dad warning, so to speak. And Amber doesn't even blink. And even Varian is frowning at her. And she's like, what? I love this little bit. The Prince of Adriata gave her an exasperated smile. Haven't we talked about this? About being nice? So Amber rolls her eyes. But her face softens ever so much because Varian. And she looks at Cassian and she goes, a week. Nesta gets a week. And we get a snowflake. But I love that Varian's haven't we talked about this? About being nice?
I know. Like, thank God for Varian, right? He's like the only one who could get away with saying that.
Sadly, he really is. Even warning to her just didn't have the same effect.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my god. So we get a snowflake, and like, quick update on the ladies and their lessons. Emery comes every week, you know, or every day, and Gwen does too. And Gwen's mostly caught up with Nesta, because as we remember, she was like kind of naturally, like, you know, coordinated. And Emery is still struggling, probably because of her wings and her balance and shit. And basically, we just chat about the fact that, like, you know, the women are, you know, working out together, training together, chatting about their novels together. And by about day 4 or 5, Nesta finds that she's starting to wake up excited to go to training and excited to see them, which, again, I think is, like, huge, right? And so fast forward from there, and we're at the library, right?
Yeah.
We have a slight problem. Gwen comes like rushing up and she's like, I don't know how, but Meryl learned you swapped the book out. You should go. Nesta's like, who cares? Like, no. Like, fuck this. No. And she tries to be like, you don't want to see Meryl in a fury. And Meryl's like, excuse me? You don't want to see what? Okay. Now we're about to get a Meryl and Nesta showdown. And the thing is like, I'm not really sure on what earth Gwen has known Nesta all this time. And Gwen thought for a second that Nesta was going to back down to Meryl.
I know. I think it's kind of cute that she's just like, what?
Yeah. So Gwen's now like, oh, Jesus, I don't want to watch this. I don't want to be here for this. And Meryl says to Nesta, I do not appreciate thieves and liars. And Nesta just says, neither do I. So Meryl, like, totally shifts gears and starts accusing Gwen of her, like, own stupidity, which, you know, like, the only, like, surefire way to set Nesta off, if, like, getting in her face wasn't going to piss her off, is probably getting in Gwen's face. So Meryl's like, it is inexcusable to ask others to make up for your own stupidity and carelessness. And Nesta's like, bitch, what?
Yeah, pretty much.
She basically is like, what the heck? Like, what is your deal? Like, who cares? You just are, like, creating drama because you are, like, lame and stupid and lonely down here. And you're, like, too dumb to have your own life. So you're just creating drama down here. We're busy. Why don't you get the hell out of here? And apparently other people in the library are listening, because like somewhere else in the library you hear somebody be like,
ooh.
And Meryl, this is the weirdest flex, right? Meryl's like, do you not know who I am, girl? And it's like, no, actually we have no fucking idea, lady. Like, what is your point? And she's like, I know that you're keeping us from our work, which Like, damn, Nesta, like, go off. Meryl, sounds like Meryl needs it. And yeah. Meryl, again, weird fucking flex, is like, she's like, well, like, I know who you are, and I know, like, what the cauldron did to you. Like, do you think it's, like, a secret, blah, blah, blah? It's like, no, I don't think she fucking thinks that.
Well, not only that, but then she's also like, and you're the one who killed the King of Highburn and then held his head like a trophy. Like, well, Jesus, that's a image.
Okay, but like, even if she did, what? You were pro-King of Highburn? Like, what the fuck is your point?
Exactly.
I do not understand. But anyway, I really don't understand the purpose of Meryl at all at this point. But that's okay, other than to just like, be a bitch.
Bit of an antagonist, yeah.
She literally ends her little, like, rant with, like, do you think you're entitled to do as you please now? Like, yeah, kind of. Yeah, kind of. Like, I don't, what the fuck? Anyway, Nesta just says, like, I think you like to hear yourself talk too much. And Meryl, I don't know, Meryl then just keeps saying stupid shit and putting her foot in her mouth. Because she's like, unlike Gwyneth Verdera, I am no lackey to be dismissed. Like, literally, Nesta thinks, to hell with this witch. And I'm like, really? If there was any time to call somebody just a straight up bitch, this was it. But anyway, whatever. That's fine. To hell with this witch is fine. So Nesta's like, cool, cool. You want to be a bitch? You want to be a witch? I'll show you a fucking witch. And she lets her powers, like, come to the surface just enough to make her eyes do the glowy, creepy thing.
Yeah, just a little.
And, yeah, so then she just, like, keeps talking as Meryl's starting to get a little like, wait, what? And she's like, with a fancy title like that, surely such a pretty grudge should be beneath, or such a petty grudge should be beneath you. And now Nesta's smiling, which is probably just, like, really uncomfortable. So yeah, Meryl literally can't let anything go and is like, all right, we'll get back to your work, nymph, to Gwyn. Like, fuck this woman, right? Hey, but at least she leaves, like, thank fucking god, right? To which, okay, then this opens this weird side plot for like a page and a half where I'm like, I'm sorry, what? So then Nesta's like, I'm sorry, nymph, like, what kind of weird fucking thing is that for her to call you? And Gwyn's like, oh yeah, like, my grandmother was a river nymph who seduced a high fey male from the autumn court, so I'm a quarter nymph, but it's enough for this. And then she shows, like, her big-ass eyeballs, but I don't... okay, I get the important part was that sentence, right? Like, in case you missed it, her grandmother was a river nymph who seduced a high fey male from the autumn court. I'm gonna leave it there because I could go off on a whole rant about something that I saw in one of the groups where somebody pointed out a thing that I also was like, wait, this feels like a giant inconsistency, but I will save that for, like, I don't know, maybe we'll talk about it in the Discord or another live.
What?
Well, there's just, like, this giant hole of, like, how does Fire Knight work? Because I guess in ACOTAR, the way the line actually reads is, either Tamlin's a fucking idiot, or there's an inconsistency, which is Tamlin claims all of the court, but we know that that's not true.
I'm sure in some way all of the courts acknowledge Fire Knight.
No. He claims that whole, like, having sex with a weirdo stranger thing, he claims yeah. that happens in all of the courts, and it doesn't. So either he's a big dumbass liar, or it's just a weird inconsistency that never got written into the plot after that.
Fair.
The reason that matters is because people, like, talk about this and think that that's how this happened, but then it's like, well, but did it? Because if she's saying it's the Autumn Court that did it, like, does the Autumn Court do it? Because we know the Night Court doesn't. We're pretty sure Summer doesn't. Tarquin was never like, hey, I got plans that day. Like, but yeah, anyway, could go down that rabbit hole for forever, I'm sure, but just, yeah, that made me laugh. But anyway, she does go on to say, like, my mother was unwanted by either of their people, so she could not dwell in the rivers of the Spring Court, but she could dwell in the rivers of the Spring Court, but was too untamed to endure the confinement of the Forest House of Autumn. Like, she was given her childhood, so long story short, you can read the whole thing because I just realized this quote goes on for the whole damn page. Point is, we get that little background about like where she comes from and how she ended up in the temple. And she does say like she, like her mom, I guess, like partook in the Great Rite, which is, you know, when she was of age. And then she and her sister were the result of that with a, you know, male stranger. So then it's like, well, then that's why the whole, like, is it, then it has to be the Supreme Court because the other courts don't actually do this.
No, her mom, she makes the comment that her mom, it was, I thought, I'm pretty sure she makes the comment. Oh, no.
Yeah, see what I'm saying? She partook in the Great Rite when she was of age, and my sister and I, were the result of the sacred union with a male stranger. So the reason people are so, okay, I guess we will go down this rabbit hole. The reason people are so like, wait, what? Is because unless this timeline is way whack, there's like really no way that she's either not like, she has to basically be related to Tamlin in some way because of the only option of who.
That's what all the theory is now about.
Right. Right, but then the the weird part about it is because then we're so hung up on like her first thing where she's like, my grandmother was a river nymph who seduced a high fey male from the Autumn Court. So we already know that she has to be related to Baron's family tree. Just seems uncomfortable. And I think that's why people were down the rabbit hole being like, something in here has to be fucking wrong, basically. Not in these two paragraphs necessarily, but in the family tree and how the Great Rite works. Because it would make no sense to make somebody who's essentially a side character related to two high fae families. That just, like, what? What? Fair. Like, it just... That's too many things happening. You know what I mean? That's when we all of a sudden we're getting into like once upon a time land where everybody is everybody's grandma and their sister.
Like, well, yeah, but you know, I think sometimes people put too much on it because grandma seduced a high fae male in the Autumn Court. It could be any.
Well, true. Of Baron's. Yeah, okay. I guess that's true. There could be some. It's just got to be of the highness. So there's not. Terribly.
So that could be any one of his courtiers or anything else. Yeah. So there's no promise there. Now the true. One that leads suspicion is that her mother the magic chose the male for her mother that night. Now, and Lucien has said in the past.
Sure.
We all partake.
Yeah. Let me just put it this way. I don't care how we end up making this work out. It's going to be fucking weird and it's going to feel like once upon a time where it's like, I'm sorry, what? So your daughter is essentially, as far as our brain is able to conceive, the same fucking age as you. I know that's not really how the ages work in Feyland, but that's still essentially because of how you're going to line up these, like, families. I'm sorry, what? Like, it's just going to make everybody else's relationships really uncomfortable if all of a sudden Lucien has a daughter, but then Lucien marries Elaine. Do you see what I'm saying? Who's the same age as Nesta, who's friends with his daughter? Do you see why this would be fucked?
I'm not saying it's not fucked. I'm just saying.
Like, can we all say that this is a once upon a time plot? Because it is. Like, everybody's going to be everybody's grandma and sister.
Like, definitely a stretch. But, I mean, okay, so here's the thing. If for any reason this child was, you know, if for any reason, because everybody's like, oh, she must be related to Tamlin. I don't think she is, because first of all, she would have more power than she does.
Sure.
And even though if she were Lucien's, technically she should have more power than she does. But... Well,
right. Yeah, that's why I called this a rabbit hole. The most easy to swallow makes the most sense that I could get on board with was that the grandma... was whoever the High Fae in the Autumn Court was of like Baron's family, which would make when a relative of, like, Lucien and Eris and all of them, but not, like, their sister. You know what I mean? It would just make her a relative of their family.
Okay.
In which case, the other piece about the Spring Court is just a, like, you know, red herring situation. Because, like I said, like I started, one of these two kind of has to be red herring. Otherwise, everybody's related to everybody, and that's fucking weird.
No, I don't. That isn't. I don't disagree. I guess my question now is, here's the thing. We don't know how old Eris is.
Yeah.
No, he's the oldest of Baron's children. Mm-hmm. And the Autumn, the High Lord of Autumn, and the Lady of Autumn had, I want to say, almost all of their children before the war.
Right. Yeah, like, the age gap between Lucien and his brothers is, I think, way wider than we think it is.
I'm going to go down a crazy-ass rabbit hole.
Go for it.
Throw this out there.
I think it's the same one that makes sense to me.
What if Grandma seduced Eris?
Yeah. That's kind of what I thought, too, because then that's also kind of the perfect red herring in the sense that, like, it's not that anything she said was not right. It's just that, like, yeah, you're right. It'd be fucking weird if she was related to everybody. You know what I mean? Like, it's like it would still allow everything to make, like, mostly logistical sense. And it would allow, like, what she was saying about how it's like, oh, well, like, her mom was with somebody during the Great Rite, and, like, that's because we were sort of in the Spring Court, because we were in that temple that was referenced back in, like, Akamath, because that's the first one that got sacked. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it would just mean that everything lined up so that we're seeing, like, you know what I mean? Like, it would make sense without it being, like, punch you in the face, like, a little too much.
Yeah, I don't, I don't know. I mean, this is me spitballing theories, people, so. Sure.
Yeah.
But anyway. I mean, I could be completely off, but I'm beginning to wonder, like, just trying to do the math, because we know her mother is dead.
Right.
But we don't know anything about Grandma.
Yeah.
For all we know, Grandma could still be alive.
Yeah, Grandma could still be kicking.
And we know how the Fae age. And if that's the case, I wonder if Grandma is somewhere between Eris and Baron as far as age, looks, all of that. You know what I mean?
Could be. Well, and also we have no idea because she's like a river nymph, which is a totally different ball game. Like, I don't know nothing about that.
We don't know what their lifespan is.
Right. So she could be still be kicking or not.
And even if she's not, Mama was half High Fae.
Yeah.
Whoever Mom met and did the deed with on the Great Rite had to be High Fae.
Yeah. It's a lot. Anyway, Gwyn told this story out of no fucking where and is now looking stressed. And Nesta is kind of feeling like us, where it's like, well, that's a lot of information I wasn't prepared to deal with. Then Gwyn goes, yeah, my twin had the webbed fingers of the nymphs. I don't. And again, Nesta's like, had? Jesus! Oh my god! Like, please, what's going on? Get us out of this conversation! And then Gwen just, like, 180s out of here and is like, Meryl will make your life a living hell, you know? And Nesta's like, yeah, she can try. And they momentarily bond over having a common enemy, you know, like the best of girlfriends do. And she just tells her, like, you know, anytime you need someone to knock Meryl down a few pegs, let me know. And Gwyn just says a cute thing where she says, next time, perhaps I'll have the courage to do it myself.
Very true.
And then we get to Snowflake.
Yay, Snowflake. This chapter goes on.
I mean, it really does. This next part is so cute and I love it.
It is. It's super adorable. So, on the other side of Snowflake, apparently, Nesta's standing up to Meryl, being like, yo, bitch. made some of the other priestesses have confidence. And so, three of them suddenly decide to start training. They just show up. And Gwen and Nesta and Emery, of course, are doing their morning stretches. And Cassie and standing there, you know, Mr. Eagle Eye, you know, watching for mistakes and all. And as soon as the priestesses get there to the ring, Gwen jumps up because she knows them. So we all know she's going to have to be the one to make the introductions.
Right.
As she, I love this description on here that Nesta has in, you know, her internal monologue that says, the priestess, meaning Gwen, had been pretty in the library, but with that joy, that confidence, as she aimed for the three priestesses, she had emerged into a beauty to rival Meryl or more.
Yeah, I still have a hard time picturing Meryl looking good since she's such a fucking bitch, but okay.
Kind of like, go back to high school and the super popular girl who's also a total bitch and made everyone's life hell unless you were in her little circle. Kind of like Mean Girls.
Right, but the hilarious part about Mean Girls is I think those girls are so fucking ugly. It's like they just permeate stupid and I'm like, yeah, sure. Like, it just does not make sense to me.
I understand, but when you were in high school, did you have those girls that were just so pretty, yet they were bullies?
No, like, literally, that's my point. Like, no, because literally everybody, like, and maybe that's the thing. It's like, it probably varies. Like, I know they thought that, but, like, we actually all, like, and I don't mean we, like, me and a few geeks. I mean, literally, like, they couldn't get dates because people thought they were such bitches.
Yeah, not so much. I guess me going to high school in the 80s, it was more like a John Hughes movie than, like, people think I'm kidding when I say going to high school in the 80s for me was like living in a John Hughes movie. I really was living in a John Hughes movie.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, I think by the time I was in high school, there was, you know, people are always talking about how like cliques are bad, but honestly, they sort of have their place, which is you don't, like, why would there only be one fucking hierarchy when these people don't even have the same goals? So like, there were really more like hierarchies within cliques.
I understand. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but anyway, carry on. I just can't even imagine what these, what Meryl looks like. But that's okay. It's fine. I'll work on it.
So anyway, she comes up, she acknowledges the three priestesses, Rosalind, Deirdre, and Anna Kay, I think.
Yep, I don't, that's what I said in my head, but I could be wrong.
I could be wrong too at this point. I'd have to go back and listen to the book for the correct pronunciation. You know, Cassian goes into his little welcome, and you know, he kind of gets, you know, ready to get them started. Rosalind and Anna Kay don't say anything or do anything, but Deirdre pulls her hood off, and it literally takes everything in Nesta and Emery to not acknowledge what they're seeing, which is apparently there's this horrific scar that cuts across Deirdre's face. It nearly misses her left eye, and it was raised stark white against her brown skin and flowed from her tightly curling black hair to her slender, lovely jaw. And her round, dark eyes were framed by a thick sweep of lashes that made them seem even rounder. And Deidre's the one who speaks, and she's like, you know, we hope we're not too late. And they all look to Nesta, not Cassian. They're looking to Nesta because they see Nesta as the boss.
Yeah.
And she's looking at Cassian, and he gives her that look of, I'm just the instructor, man. You're it. This is your idea.
Yeah, exactly. You invited him, lady.
And so Nesta sucks it up, and she steps forward, and she's like, nope. We're just beginning. Come on and join us. And we get a snowflake.
All right. So now we're feeling strong. We're feeling confident. So we're asking the house, give us those bones and stones. And Cassian's following a step behind, like, I don't know what we're about to do. I mean, I guess now I do that you asked for those, but are we sure we want to do this? Like, I just picture this a little bit like a Scooby-Doo moment where it's like, wait, is this really the plan? But mostly he's also distracted by the fact that when she asked for it, the house really gave it to her. And he's like, damn, the house really does listen to you. And she's just looking at him like, yeah, I fucking told you, dude. But they get themselves all prepped, okay? They're at the table, and they got the map, and she's got the bones and stones, and she's got the little bowl, and we take up position, and by position, I mean... Sorry. By position, I mean she's at the table, and a la Akawar, he's standing, like, right behind her, right?
And hand on the small of her back.
Hand on her back, yeah. And they're just like, you know, a little unit, which is really cute. And Cassian asks her, why did you change your mind? Like, about, you know, scrying. And she doesn't really want to think too hard about it. She doesn't want to, like, talk herself out of it. But she just says, I couldn't stop thinking about those priestesses who came to practice today. Rosalind said that she hadn't set foot outside in 60 years. And Deidre, with those scars, I'm asking them to be brave, to work hard, to face their fears. Yet I'm not doing the same. And Cassian's like, I don't really think that anybody thinks that, and even though he's probably thinking, well, actually, probably the inner circle thinks that, but I don't think that. It's not logical to think that.
Right.
And she's like, well, I don't need anyone to say it, I just know it. I might fear the scrying, but I fear being a coward hypocrite even more. And so she's gonna do it. And he's like, okay, real quick, like, before we're gonna do this, like, I'm not really trying to talk you out of it, but at the same time, like, don't you sort of think, like, maybe Amarin and or Rhys should be here? Like, somebody with, like, some power, you know, in case this goes sideways. And she's like, no, I don't need them, which I kind of love. Like, fuck them, right? And she goes still, and he's like, all right, fine, like, that's the end of it. She said she's doing it, she's gonna do it. And she closes her eyes and she starts, like, doing the thing, which, I mean, it, logically to me makes, like, no sense, but it's fine. she starts, you know, trying to quiet her mind, which, you know, is already where I'd fuck up. And she's trying to focus on her breathing, and she's trying to, like, quiet, like, the sounds, you know, like, in her head. And the weird part about this is as she's doing those things, she goes into, like, exactly why I can't do those things, which is in her head, she starts thinking all of these horrible things about herself, where she's like, I failed at everything, but, like, I can do this. I failed my father. I failed Feyre. Like, I failed our mother, I guess. I failed Elaine. Like, Elaine doesn't even fucking like me right now. Like, this sucks. and then all of a sudden, in this, like, self-hatred spiral, Cassian's like, anything? And she says, don't talk. And I'm like, I don't think this is going to work, because I thought the quieting your brain part was, like, pivotal, but now we're going through our self-hatred mantras, and I don't think this is going to fly. But anyway, somehow she jumps from the self-hatred mantra to thinking about the dread trove, the mask, the harp, the crown, the mask, the harp, the crown, where is the mask of the dead trove? And somehow this sort of starts to click a little bit. She's, like, trying to, like, make this work. But there's just, like, a piece missing. Like, she was trying to do this while also thinking, but don't let the cauldron see me, which is probably the part that fucked it all up, you know? And yeah. She keeps trying to will, like, the mask. She's like, fine, I will just focus on one. The mask. Find the mask. Nothing. So she kind of tries going through all of this again, and she's trying to think of the common, you know, origin of all of it. The trove. The cauldron, big nothing. So now she's, like, scrunching up her face, and she's just trying to think about the cauldron, the vast bowl of darkness, like, darkest iron, so large multiple people could use it as a bathtub. It has a physical shape, and yet, you know, not. It's utter darkness. It existed before light. She's going down the rabbit hole. She's starting to sweat. I'm starting to think this is about to work. And then nothing. She opens her eyes. Nothing. I got nothing. Right? I got nothing. Because she starts to connect with it and freaks the fuck out. So, Nesta. And she's just, like, totally frozen. Nesta. And she just says, I can't. The power, I don't think I have it anymore. But mostly I think she just ignored it. But that's fine. And Cassian tries to be like, it's not your fault. Like, I know you still have your power. I've seen it in you. Like, you just gotta try again. But she is just steadfast. I can't.
Right.
Gotta give Cassian credit because he's like, all right, like, I'm not gonna push it. That's fine. Like, you tried. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So, like, good credit on him, but she just basically goes straight to bed. No dinner, no nothing. Can't even think about it. Just go straight to bed. And we get another snowflake. I really, really feel like we could have gotten a chapter break somewhere in here, but it's fine because...
You think?
The next section's pretty cool, so carry on.
It is. It is. So, it literally starts out, and this is like, if you didn't know better, you'd swear you're reading a horror book at this point, because...
Yeah, for real.
This is definitely not a cool feeling, because it starts off literally on the other side of the snowflake saying, it was searching for her. Winding through the hallways of the house, wending like a dark snake, it searched and sniffed and hunted for her. Now, I'm sorry, but that is scary as fuck.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, ew.
Yeah.
And she could literally feel whatever this is coming closer to her. She can't move her body. She can't open her eyes. It's darkness. And it, as it says, it slithers to her bed. She forces her eyes open to see it gather over her, a cloud with no shape and no form, but such wicked presence she knew its name before it leaped. She screamed as the cauldron's darkness pinned her to the bed. And then there was nothing but the horrible weight of it filling her body, tearing her apart from the inside out, and then nothing. And we get another snowflake.
Yeah, so now we get Cassian's point of view. And he is just like jolting awake. He's like, I don't know why, but something feels weird. Something is not right. I feel this like weird energy in the room, right? Oh. And the air's gone cold and everything seems like thick and weird. And the lights are like flaring and flickering. And all of a sudden he's like flaring and flickering. Fuck, the house is trying to tell me something. So he just,
yeah.
Like, fuck. And he's like, oh my God. And so he, like, jolts out of bed, right? And he, like, grabs the knife, and as his door flings open at, like, the same time, like, what the fuck is this? And so they're running, and Cassian hits the landing right where Nesta's room is, and he hears her screaming, and he's like, it's not, like, a rage, like, I'm just having a moment scream. This is just pure fucking terror. And so he, yeah. Like, freezes for, like, an absolute split second, because obviously that is, like, heartbreaking to him, right? And he just, like, tears into her room, like, you know, he's got, like, the worst fucking weapon ever from what he's had to encounter, but anyway, he busts into her room, and Az is trying to catch up to him, like, Cassian, my dude, wait for me, what the fuck, I can't just be going in half-cocked like a lunatic, and he just, like, doesn't care, he busts in anyway, and finds Nesta is laying in her bed all, like, out of a horror movie, like, arched all over the place, and just in a silver fire. What the fuck? Yeah. And so she's screaming bloody murder because, well, she's being burned here, right? And Azrael literally is just like, holy gods. Like, it takes a lot for Azrael to be like, I got nothing. But he's like, I got nothing. What the fuck do we do now? And they get close enough to the, like, fire to realize, like, this is actually a weird situation because it's, like, a fire, but it's, like, an ice fire. So what the fuck? Again, like, what the fuck is this? And she is screaming, and Cassian is trying to, like, lunge for her, but Azrael's like, you can't fucking do that, my dude. Like, do you also want it? Like, we don't know how to put out one fire. How do you want me to put out two?
Right.
And Nesta is screaming, and she's screaming, no, and she just starts pleading, like, no, 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 and they're like, what is actually happening, right? And this is when, all of a sudden, like, all of the, like, fire, all of the air in the room is just, like, sucked out, and the windows blow out, which is horrifying. But, like, oddly convenient, because at this moment, as a window, like, you know, big, nice hole, what's to bust in but some shadow wind stars? It's Reese.
Yay, Reese and
which, like, thank God, right? So he comes in with his power, basically using his darkness to try to smother whatever the fuck is happening with this fire, right? And Nesta is screaming, and he's, like, trying to smother this all out, right? And as it starts to clear just enough for Cassie to really see, like, what the hell is going on, he can tell that Reese is screaming at Nesta, "Nesta, this is a dream." And all of a sudden, this is, like, a huge fucking flashback to all of, like, the aftermath nonsense that we kept, like, seeing happen to, like, Reese and Feyre, right?
Yep, yep.
This doesn't go as well as one would have hoped, because then her little, like, fire situation just, like, revs up, and the entire house is shaking, and Cassian is trying to get to her, and Azrael's like, "My dude, I swear to God, there's nothing you can do to help, so I'm just trying to hold you back while Reese does whatever the fuck Reese does," and he's screaming, "Wake up, it's a dream, wake up." Cassian's fighting Azrael, "Let me go, Az, let me go right now," and Cassian's just like, he's just beside himself, right, which, again, if we didn't fucking know, why, But when he does kind of break free of Az, he's smart enough not to, like, bounce into this situation. He just walks up, like, to the bed and he says, "Nesta." And somehow, this is just enough to sense, like, a slight shift in her consciousness. Like, she must hear that. That somehow him talking is breaking through all of the bullshit, right?
Yep.
And, yeah. Reese, kind of, like, freezes up in a way that Cassian has seen before, realizing that he's doing the whole Daemati talking brain-to-brain thing. And after a moment, we see Nesta finally, like, relaxing and the smoke going out, the fire going out, and she's breathing. And she's unconscious, but, like, in a sleeping, like, okay kind of way, I guess. I would have been more concerned than they seem to be about this, but I guess we're just trusting that Reese did what Reese does. Whatever the fuck that is.
Right.
And Azrael's like, "Cool, now they're, like, we're all breathing again. What the fuck was that?" And Cassian and Reese are both just, like, staring at each other, like, and Cassian's like, "Should we get Feyre?" And Reese is like, "No, are you crazy? She can't come here," obviously from, like, a, you know, overly matey mate sense. He's trying to keep her safe, but I can understand why Cassian was like, "Well, maybe she wants to know that her sister almost." But
happy, happy, joy, joy. Yeah. No, I mean, this is horrible, and, you know, I mean, Azrael's just kind of like, that's Nesta's true power, silver fire.
Right, he's like, I didn't know that was an option.
Yeah, exactly. And Reese is like, no, that's just the surface. And they're both, you know, both Cass and Az are looking at him like, and there's more to this. Please, please tell us what else we're missing. And then he's like, Reese is like, I went into her nightmare. And then he looks at Cassie and he's all mad. He's like, why didn't you tell me you attempted a scrying today?
I just like that Cassian immediately is like, well, I didn't tell you because she didn't want me to and it didn't work. So, like, I was thinking, what the fuck is there to tell? I mean, we stood there, nothing happened. Like, what the fuck is there to report?
And poor Reese lets out a breath and he goes, the scrying was a tripwire for the memories. He caught that. He goes, I caught that as I went in. She was dreaming of the cauldron, of when she went in.
Please,
struggling for how to explain this.
Please carry on, because this part pissed me off to no belief.
It's having a hard time talking about this. And Reese is like, I saw it, felt it, everything that happened within the cauldron. Saw her take its power with her teeth and claws and rage. And I felt what it took from her. And it's like, okay. And now Reese is just, he's rubbing his face and he's looking at Cassie and he's all remorseful and he's like, her trauma is, and he can't get it out. And Cassian's like, I know. And Reese is like, I guess. But it felt different to feel it.
Okay.
Well, what? Okay, what? Asshole.
What? What? This is so annoying to me. This is so fucking annoying to me. Because this is the thing, and this is why I haven't understood the whole time. Rhys and Feyre at any time could have used just even a slight glimpse of their power to have any kind of insight into what Nesta and Elaine were dealing with. And after a year and like a plus, right? Like a year and a half, they just never bothered.
Exactly. That pisses me off too. Pisses
me off so much. Is Rhys is just now like, wow, she's really fucked up, isn't she? Yeah, asshole. Why do you think, like, this didn't occur to you before literally everything you've done in this book? Like, that didn't occur to you before you guys were like, let's just go lock her up in the house of wind. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you people?
Exactly.
Just irritated me to death. But anyway, you know, we got Azriel here asking the real hard-hitting questions. He's like,
what's her power?
Yeah. Death. Dun, dun, dun. Her power is, quote, pure death. And that's finally the end of the chapter.
God. This chapter, I thought it was never going to end. I mean, we have spent more than an hour on just this chapter.
Yeah.
Bonkers.
I know.
Bonkers.
I know. I mean, we had a few little side tangents in there, but they were relevant to the chapter.
They are relevant. I mean, I still have a tangent that it's like, okay, so Rhys, because you've read ahead. I've read ahead. Yes. Well, of course, I've read ahead. I've read the whole book.
So, like, spoilers, if you want to be done, this is the end of the episode. Goodbye. Yeah. But if you want to chat for a moment about the stuff we thought we were going to cover in this section, but then this chapter was too long, we got a minute.
Here's my thing, though. Okay? Like, he goes in. He finally sees what happened to her. He experiences what happened to her. And he's still a dick to her after. Right.
He's still immediately like, cool, so are you feeling better today? Ready to try again? Try the scrying thing again? Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? What kind of stupid-ass plan is this?
Because he never would have done that with Feyre.
Right. What kind of stupid-ass plan is this? Yeah. Yeah. This whole thing is just so fucking irritating. Yeah, I don't know what the hell his problem is. I don't know why at this point Cassian hasn't been like, hey, don't fucking talk to her literally for like a week, okay, man? Don't even fucking talk to me for like a week. I've had about as all this fuckery as I can fucking take. But I don't know. For some reason, we just like keep letting the steamroll us. I don't fucking know.
I know.
We will just lump songs for this into the next episode because they're all one giant fucking list. It's great. It's fine.
Actually, you don't have to do them.
Never mind.
I have them.
Ooh, do it. Take it away.
So, because originally, guys, we were going to do three chapters, but we spent so much time on this one, we decided just to do this chapter. So, these are the songs I have. Wow, it's a lot for this section. So, chapter 29 is long, and it gets 9 songs all on its own. So, damn, you guys go figure that out, right? All right. So the first song is In Her Eyes by Fame on Fire, and it literally has to do with the silver flame fire that she has going on in her eyes when she and Meryl get into it. Song 2 is Walk Through the Fire by Zaid Wolf and Ruel.
Okay. I'm sorry. I have to stop for a second and be like, the first time, I think I even fucking told Kim about this song, but then when she reminded me about this song, she just was like, yeah, Walk Through the Fire, and immediately I was thinking of the Buffy musical episode, and I'm just hearing in my head, and we will walk through the fire. Oh my god, it was the fucking worst. She told me and I was like, I know that's not what you said, but I still can't stop hearing it. Anyway.
Yeah, well, that definitely changes things, doesn't it?
Yeah, so anyway. I mean, actually, Nesta and Buffy have, like, very similar traumas.
They do.
They actually have, like, really fucking similar traumas.
Okay.
Carry on.
I I'll let you guys figure out why I picked that one, because if you don't know why I picked the song at this point after what we just read, we got other problems. Anyway, the next song is By Your Side featuring Tom Grennan by Calvin Harris and Tom Grennan. And it's Cassian, basically, to Nesta. Like, he is going to be there for her and, you know, do this as they're trying to do the scrying and everything else. The next song I have is Stand by R.E.M. Yes, it's a little poppy, but it is not what it's for. And it has more to do with, actually, when Nesta's trying to do that scrying, where she's trying to get her focus. And, you know, it's like, if you listen to the lyrics of the song Stand, it's, you know, stand in the place where you live, stand in the place where you work, now face north, now face west. And it walks you through the points of the compass, trying to get you to focus on where you are in your life and what you're doing. And I think it's a very apropos song lyrically to what Nest is trying to do in this scrying. So that's why I picked it. It's definitely a very happy poppy song for what's going on. So don't think I'm totally crazy. I mean, I'm crazy, but not that crazy.
You didn't suggest a song from the Buffy musical episode, so you're doing better than me, okay?
The next song is Never Forget by Kendra Dantes. And it has really, it's her nightmare, you know, it's sure. Because she is literally going back through everything she's lived through and experienced to that point. Song six is Devil Inside Me by Halocene. And it's literally when the darkness is pounced into her body and is consuming her from the inside out. The next song made Kelsey laugh quite hard when I said it. It is, song seven is Knife Under My Pillow by Maggie Lindemann. I was like, and I'm reading the lyrics and I was like, and after I listened to it, I went back and I pulled the lyrics up and I'm like, and wow, like, did she read this book and then write this song?
Right.
Okay, then. Then song eight is In My Head by Mike Shinoda and Kaylee Morg, for when Reese literally goes into her head and sees everything. And the last song is Stand By Me by Ben E. King. And it's a two-parter because Cian's literally standing there when she tries to scry, and he's got his hand on her back. He's trying to be that rock for her. But at the same time, when she's going through this nightmare and Reese is in there, you know, Azrael is like holding him back as much as he can until he just can't. And Cassian literally goes and stands by the bed to get to Nesta to break through. And so it's like he's going to be there for her. And so those are the nine songs for this section.
Yeah. And you can find us on all the things. You can chat with us in the Discord and see my GIF reacts to chapters. Those are always a good time. And you can find us on all the things, you know, MassiveFansBookClub.com, Facebook at Massive Fans Book Club and Podcast, Twitter at Massive Podcast, Instagram at Massive Fans Pod, Pinterest at Massive Fans, TikTok at Massive Fan Pod, and you can find the link to my Wattpad Lucian Feyre nonsense, and the link to our Discord and all that crap in the show notes. So, you know.
Yeah. So we'll finish this section next time. So you have, well, a kind of mini episode this time, and next one will definitely be a mini-sode. And we'll go from there.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.